It's the return of the Kalen as we discuss R.I.P.D. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey guys, how are you doing? I'm Stuart Wellington.
Thanks.
And I'm Hallie Haglund. What? Right? No, I'm not. I'm
hey,
Elliot Kalen.
Elliot's back.
Hey,
that was probably your worst impression I've ever heard.
No, I'll try better. Hold on. Hello, it's me, Hallie Haglund.
Perfect.
Let me close my eyes.
Okay, hold on this. Hi, I'm Hallie. I'm a girl.
Well, that's pretty close.
Kitty cats and puppy dogs, tea parties, princess unicorn. That's what Great. Girls sound like.
Good stuff.
Anyway, yeah, I'm back.
Yeah.
Bitches? Should I have that much attitude?
No.
So, Elliot, we've made a few changes in your absence.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I've been gone for
format.
A month.
Now this is called.
You've been on assignment.
I've been on assignment as a father.
You've been on a mission to Moscow.
If by Moscow you mean parenthood, and by mission you mean life change, and by
but you
two,
look great,
you mean,
man. Your hair is super long.
Yeah,
you're like a wild man.
Yeah, I'm like Thor, just flowing locks. Yeah. That's
you're
what
like
happens.
Thor, a helmet with tiny wings.
And I got
it's more
a
of a Mercury if you for a helmet with.
Okay. I got a magic hammer and also a baby.
Okay.
Just like Thor.
Just don't confuse them because that would be
I already swung my baby around and tried to fly with it. Didn't work.
There's been a slight format change. We're now known as the Fruit House, which is going to talk about our favorite fruits.
Gotta go!
Oranges, apples.
Not interested.
No, come back.
I'll just go now.
It was a bit... Well, Stuart.
He's really using all the space. That's what I liked about that bit.
There was some Foley work there where I opened
room.
And slammed a door. I don't know if you heard it. Uh-oh. I'll just warm myself by the fire. Crinkle, 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 crinkle.
There's a ghost over there. Boogans, boogans.
chain rattle.
Dan, come on. Do a joke.
And
you're
there's
drinking.
A lion. Lion sound.
Roar.
MGM.
Yeah, that's his lion's yell. They yell MGM.
Metro Golden Meyer, whatever.
No, and no.
That's why I threw whatever in there to cover my ass.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot.
Because I don't care, man. I'm a teen. I
forgot you covered this with that with the whatever clause.
Mr. Gordon Mercury.
Mr.
M stands for Mr., huh? Okay. It's gender specific.
So.
My grandma's meatloaf.
Hey.
An MGM production.
Damn, what's going on?
Hey guys, real talk.
Okay.
Before we get into the movie of the week or the 2 weeks,
which is what we do here at the Flophouse.
Here at the Flophouse,
we do a movie every 2 weeks.
We watch a movie and then we talk about it. Is the movie bad? Usually,
yeah, an allegedly bad movie, and we talk about it. Before we get into it, we should take a trip. To Moneytopia,
really, that's the extent of the welcome that I got before we go to the sponsor spot.
Yeah, well,
we missed you, Elliot.
You guys too. I really
mean, I see you every day at work, so it really hasn't been like
yeah,
we've been
I see you every day on my phone when I look at pictures that Dan posts from work.
Okay, so it's like you're hanging out with me.
Yeah,
I talk
to my phone.
I missed not being here for the last couple episodes. I was sad about it, but now I'm back, so thank you. Thanks to the fans for sticking with us through that dark period when I wasn't on the show.
Yep.
Anyway, so we're going to Moneytopia, you said?
Mm-hmm. Do a little sponsor spot for one of our new sponsors.
And want me to take care of this spot for you?
Yeah.
Out, damn spot. Out of my mouth, that is. And here we go. Pro Flowers. Tell you what, that's the sponsor. And I'll tell you why you need them. Valentine's Day is coming up.
Uh-oh,
you already forgot.
I already did.
Your loved one, be it man, woman, fish, or fowl, would like some flowers. You know why? Because flowers are a great way to say, I love you, let's watch something die together. here's the offer from Pro Flowers. Here's the offer from Pro Flowers. You get one dozen...
Did we switch bodies? Did we both pee in a fountain
at the same
time?
Suddenly I can't talk right. I must be Dan. Here's their offer. Get one dozen long-stem assorted roses with a vase and gourmet chocolates for only $29.99. That's crazy.
That is a good price for flowers, I'll tell you.
Double the roses. Double the roses. That's two dozen roses. 24. Long. What? How long are the stems? Long. They're long-stem roses.
Yeah.
And the vase.
None of that short-stem bullshit.
Just $9.99 more. That's just like, what, $39.98?
Don't make me do math, dude.
Well, it's a good...
This isn't the math house.
It's a good price for roses, a very good price. A dozen for $29.99 or two dozen for just $9.99 more with the chocolates and the vases and all that. And I'll tell you what, delivery on Valentine's Day is guaranteed by Pro Flowers. Some flowers places will tell you, you know what, that's too high volume a day. Forget it. You're fucked, shithead. And you're like, why would you talk to me like that? Pro Flowers, though, says, delivery's guaranteed. Nice guy that we like. Wonderful. And ProFlowers is guaranteed, the flowers are guaranteed to last 7 days or your money back. That's a long time for cut flowers. Here I want to tell you a little story about I had with ProFlowers. Once Dan and I were out on the road solving crimes and doing the Daily Show at a convention.
Sure. Impressions and
mostly
breakfasts.
The latter part.
As a result of my work thing, I missed my wife and I's anniversary. And so I ordered some flowers for her from ProFlowers. Now, unfortunately, there was a mix-up with delivery, not ProFlowers' fault. It was UPS's fault. UPS, instead of leaving them, which they're supposed to, they left one of those signature slips, and the flowers died. They didn't get to put in water. I called UPS, and they basically said, go fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. They would not help. I called ProFlowers, and they replaced them free and gave me money off for the next time I ordered flowers. So they really won my respect with that. They really take care of their customers. That's a real story that happened to me two years ago.
Kalen, yeah.
Me, Elliot Kalen. So here's the only way to get this Valentine's Day deal. The one dozen
And you're
long
still married to this day.
Yes, and we have a
probably because of the flowers.
Exactly because of the flowers. That's the only thing patching us together. Yeah. One dozen long stem roses with the vase and the chocolates for $29.99 or double that for $9.99. Go to proflowers.com, click on the blue microphone in the top right corner, and type in Flophouse. How are you going to remember that? Because it's the name of your favorite podcast. So proflowers.com, click on the microphone, and type in Flophouse. Order today, and the deal is only around while supplies last because roses are limited. There's not an unlimited number. And Valentine's Day is coming up soon. This week.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Pro flowers.
But mostly...
Where all the pros get their flowers.
Mostly we're not a flower podcast. Mostly we're a bad movie podcast, explained before. We watch an allegedly bad film, and then we talk about it. And tonight we watched a little film called R period. I period. P period.
Reading all the pronunciation out.
Period. Rippid.
Rippid. Yeah, we did whippets tonight and rippets. What does RIPD stand for? I assume it's like
Rest in Peace.
Really
division.
Interesting people, duh. Or like Rare Iguana Patrol Doctor.
You're good at this.
Yeah,
you want to
like
do some more?
Reservoir in... Igloo plus dog. It's like a real estate ad. You get a dog. Or what about a recording industry pros document? I guess it's a contract.
Recumbent Inception. Pretty.
Just going to keep going and doing this, huh, guys?
Devious.
Devious.
What about, okay, what if it was rectangular individual?
Sure, yeah.
Peeing. Okay. Dangerously. So I guess like out of an airplane window.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's from one of the Mr. books.
Yeah.
Of all those, I think I would prefer to watch the movie Rectangular Individual Peeing Dangerously.
Yeah, but unfortunately we watched Rest in Peace Department.
Yeah.
Which is, it's
and
like
you said
a
little movie, but this one costs a lot of money,
this
right?
This is a big budget movie with big stars and a big lack of ideas
you
at
got
the center of it.
Your Ryan Reynolds, you got your Jeff Bridges, you have your Mary Louise Parker.
You've got
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon is
James
in it.
James Hong
is in it.
The biggest name in Hollywood, James Hong.
I mean, but he's been in so many more movies.
Well, this was much more interesting than watching the movie, which was looking on IMDb and discovering that James Hong has 387 listings as an actor on IMDb.
Yeah.
The man has almost 400 acting credits on IMDb.
He's great, and Hollywood is lazy when it comes to casting ethnic parts.
Yeah. I mean, you may know him as the butler from Chinatown.
Yeah.
You may know him as
Lopan. Everybody who's listening to this knows him as Lopan.
Well, that's where I was going.
He was also one of the hench bad guys in Tango and Cash.
I was going to end up there, but you started.
Yeah.
He had dessert at the beginning of the meal.
I'm an adult. Yeah. I can have dessert whenever I want, bro.
Big Trouble in Little China is the dessert compared to Chinatown.
Well,
because Chinatown's a load of crap. Get that out quick. Let's get to Big Trouble in Little China.
I thought the real dessert
was Kim Cattrall in Chinatown. I don't think so. Instant F.
Him playing the butler in Chinatown is not as big a role as him playing Lopan in China in
the
big
romantic
trouble.
Lead.
In Big Trouble in Little Chinatown.
Forget it. Forget it, Jack Burton. It's Big Trouble in Little Chinatown.
Yeah,
that's how it is. But this movie, instead of that,
this movie is not
so he's criminally underused.
James
Hong, a crime that would not be enforced by the Rest in Peace Department because they
a ghost did it.
Specifically, a deado does it.
A deado, as they're
which
called,
which is not a normal ghost. Okay, you explain.
Let's talk about
sex, maybe.
I was gonna say RIPD, but all right. There's only one place where ghosts and sex intersect, and that's the blowjob scene in Ghostbusters. So let's talk about it. Anyway, Dan Aykroyd's lying on a bed.
His pants come off.
Unzip of their own accord.
Wait a minute, guys. His eyes get super crossed at some point,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Did I jump to the end again?
You did. You jumped to the
he's
end.
He's like,
scene.
I'll allow it.
Because he's what, the sex judge?
Yeah.
Bring in the defendant.
I mean, guys, if you were getting a ghost blowjob, come on.
Yeah.
They call them boo jobs.
Yeah.
You made that joke during the movie.
Yeah, but the audience, the listeners weren't there for that.
Okay.
Anyway, so Ryan Reynolds is Detective Nick Walker, a very unimaginative name, of the Boston Police Department, because every fucking movie takes place in Boston. That's a law.
It's cheap to shoot there.
It's apparently cheap to shoot there, and everybody loves doing
got an
Boston
accent.
Accents.
Yeah, we got a bunch of Ben Afflecks and Seth MacFarlanes in this movie.
Pop, Pack, and the Car, et cetera.
And so forth. They're wicked, whatever. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Hot lava.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Is that
am I right?
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Paul Revere. An old church.
Shout out. Shout out Paul Revere and beans.
Yep.
I'm from Boston.
Yep, let me blur my vision and I feel like I'm there. Yep.
Boston
foggy
legal.
Old Boston. Yeah.
That's everyone knows about that. So Ryan Reynolds is Nick Walker and he is partners with Kevin Bacon, who is slowly transforming into Ethan Hawke as he ages. It's like Ethan Hawke and Kevin Bacon are just converging into one beautiful figure of a grizzled, sharply cheekboned man with like skin like a tannery, you know,
yeah,
put together.
Like a snake man.
Yeah, like
but a beautiful snake.
But one of those pretty snakes.
Yeah, one of those snakes that mesmerizes you with its beauty.
Like a snake, what's his name from Jungle Book, you know.
Yeah.
So
wait a minute. So this was another example of the time when an actor walks on screen and we're immediately like, he's the bad guy because he's the next most famous guy.
The minute you see Kevin Bacon, you're like, oh, okay, so he's the one who's going to do it. And you'll see. So the two of them find some gold in a drug bust, and they split it up between them because they're dirty cops.
This happens off screen.
Ryan Reynolds buries it in the backyard of his house because, hey, he's trying to clean up his act so that he and his wife, Julia, who were introduced with her sans pants,
the high point of the film.
Yeah, but certainly. They have one of those scenes where the cop and his wife talk to each other, and you have to prove in one scene that this is the most loving couple in history, and they come off as the most irritating people in the world.
Yeah. But
these scenes are always written like it's two awkward people flirting for the first time.
Yeah, but they're married, and they're always in a bed. The cop is always waking up, and his wife always comes over and like talks to him.
And you have to understand, like that has to build up the stakes of the movie.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like I was gonna say, like
this is to prove that he's not a jerk or a monster. He has a wife,
Elliot,
so we should like him.
Elliot may disagree with me on this point, but this is like the romantic version of the Sandra Bullock and Gravity thing, where it's just like, oh, we're not gonna trust.
Spoiler alert:
we're not gonna trust that it's important for Sandra Bullock to get home unless she has a tragic backstory with her kid. You know, there's not enough stakes just in survival. We have to actually give her some other stuff too. And this is like, oh, there's not enough. We're not going to be sad enough if one of these people dies in this relationship. We have to show that they have the greatest love of all.
I guess, I mean, I would say in Gravity that her tragic backstory is showing why she is reluctant to save herself
mm-hmm.
rather yeah, than, right. but, That's besides the point.
Yeah, she might want to cross over and be with her child ghost.
Yeah, in the R.I.P.T. Because here's what happens. They go, Kevin Bacon and Ryan Reynolds go, they have a drug bust on some kind of meth warehouse factory, and it instantly becomes just explosions everywhere.
They do it by the book, they split up.
All the cops, there's a big army of cops, they rush into this warehouse and all go off in different directions. And
fucking
just,
start Yosemite Sam and all over the place.
Just flame everywhere, explosions.
What's one of those factories that manufactures explosions?
That's what Stuart just said.
What? It's like a heavy metal music video or something.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, they apparently they're raiding the CNC music factory. There's just gears in flame everywhere.
They're not nearly greasy enough for it to be the
fly
CNC
girls
music.
And backup dancers just falling off of railings. But in all the hubbub, Kevin Bacon kills Ryan Reynolds because he knows Ryan Reynolds is trying to go clean and he doesn't want him turning him in. Ryan Reynolds, all of time freezes around him. And he's walking through this scene of bedlam, frozen in mid-moment, and then gets sucked up into the sky, into like a cloud whirlwind full of souls.
Well, it's a vortex.
And his reaction to all this is the slightest furrowing of his brow. Ryan Reynolds could not be bothered to act the emotion of curiosity, awe, fright, wonder.
They probably didn't
surprise.
Know what it was going to look like until they did the special effects. So they're just like, I don't know, man, look sad or scared.
But
or
you
something.
Get the feeling that this has happened to him multiple times. Like, all right, here we go again. I'm walking through frozen
and that
time.
That was one of the many occasions on which I met my death.
Yeah.
but he was probably kind of wondering why he didn't get sucked up into the sky until he actually left the building, right?
That's true. Apparently, here's one of the themes in this movie is that heaven is surprisingly limited in its abilities. It cannot suck you into heaven if you're in a building. You got to go outside, and it'll take you up through the sky. But if there's a roof in the way, you're on your own. So if he decided not to leave that warehouse, I guess he'd still be haunting it to this very day.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Heaven has a police force, which we learn, because he gets pulled out and he's told that dirty cops, rather than going to hell, they're given a chance to work off their time in the RIPD, the Rest in Peace Department, run, I guess, by Mary Louise Parker, who is the, like...
It was like
sassy,
a police officer go-go dancer type.
Sassy police chief wearing a short skirt and go-go boots. And
a lot of plastic surgery.
She's wearing that. Yeah.
Yes.
She's, put it on for this movie.
She explains that, I guess, dead souls escape, and they're called deados. And they go into the living world, and they rot because of their own moral evil, and that rot infects the living world. And so the RAPD has to go and arrest them, but also just kill them sometimes. Because if you shoot them with magic bullets, they're erased from reality. But otherwise they get brought back to Deado jail, and they just kind of sit in cages yelling at each other, turning into monsters slowly.
That rot affects people as if it was a river of slime under New York.
Yep. And so he gets inducted into, let's call it, Men in Black Light.
That was the first Ghostbusters reference of the podcast, right? We're saving
some more for later. I don't want to derail the entire synopsis.
Let me just say,
synopsis.
He gets matched up with a partner played by Jeff Bridges, who is a... U.S. Marshal from the late 19th century, the Old West time. Mm-hmm.
Doing his best to erase the memory of his great Rooster Cogburn and True Grit.
He is really, he's really hamming it up, hamming it down. To be fair, he's trying to do something with the character as opposed to Ryan Reynolds, who's just walking through like in a daze. But you were going to say something about Ghostbusters.
No,
of the best movies.
Not specifically
ever
about
made.
Ghostbusters, but I think that when this movie came out.
The music's certainly better.
I said something similar to this. Like, I just have a problem with the metaphysical problem with the concept of this movie.
The concept of a ghost crime that escape criminals who escape.
Exactly. The idea that the best way to deal with escaped souls is through some sort of ghost police division. That number one, escaped souls is a thing that happens. I mean, that's been in a lot of pulp fiction. I'm fine with that. But then also just like the idea that like, okay, there is some sort of, I guess, guiding force in the universe, a god, if you will, and he decides that the best way to do this is to have a bunch of other ghosts go out and corral them in the same way that normal cops would corral criminals.
Yeah, where do you think police got the idea? From the ghost police.
All right.
Yeah.
Ghost police.
And this movie should have been called
Ghost
Police.
And they have basically carte blanche, right? I mean, they can do whatever they want.
Not really. They have. It's against the rules to be seen catching a ghost bad guy in public because some reason. It's one of those things where it's never really explained, I think, why real life people can't know about this. Because if they did know about it, it would be a lot easier to catch the bad guys, because then they could just inform on them to the ghost police. Like the same way, like you have a lot of movies where it's like, we can't tell anybody there are aliens around, but we need to do this thing. Okay, well, why not? Because if you told people, they'd get used to it eventually, and well, then they could help you.
Just
well,
don't put on those sunglasses.
Yeah, and to that point, like as
like with Men in Black, I don't understand why the aliens have to hide.
But that makes more sense. That like Men in Black, it makes more sense. Like the idea that there's a government agency that, like, for whatever reason, wants to keep the peace, like by like keeping it quiet. I don't know. Like that makes more sense. But this is like
religious fervor would set the world afire, Elliot.
Yeah, because that's not happening already.
But as we've...
No, a religious fervor would immediately totally collapse into one religion, because they'd be like, oh, this is how the system
works. So what
you're
saying is you'd prefer one religion, is that it?
I would say that I would... Yeah, then constant religious war, yes, I would prefer that.
Thanks, Star Trek.
But as we've fainted out already, like this movie's like a real slam up between Men in Black and Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
But much, much worse than either. But like... We were talking about during the movie, you know, you were forwarding a mild defense, saying that
basic premise of Ghost Police.
The premise of Ghostbusters is dumb, but it was done well, so like the movie was good.
I think it's not as dumb a premise as this.
Well, that's the thing,
but
like,
that a lot of very good movies have really stupid premises when you do if they were done poorly. For instance, and this is an example I used, King Kong. Fantastic movie, one of my favorites of all time, has a premise that has been done so poorly so many times, and it's like, oh yeah, when a movie's done poorly, then a story about a giant gorilla seems really stupid.
But I would argue that there is something inherently smarter about the Ghostbusters premise than this premise, which is that...
people are catching ghosts?
Well, yeah, in Ghostbusters, it's presented as, like... a bunch of idiots who don't necessarily understand all of the forces they're fucking with.
They all
with
have doctorates.
Going out... to like treat ghosts as if
they
like they're exterminators, whereas in this movie it's like people who have died and theoretically should know better, like working on behalf of some organizing force in the universe to catch these ghosts. And I think that's a lot dumber than the idea of like, oh, some normal Joes are gonna like go out and catch ghosts.
It is dumber. I'm just saying, I think there's a good way to do a movie about ghost police who catch ghost crooks.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe not even a movie. Like, it could be like a crappy TV show that's fun, you know.
And if it's done well, you don't spend as much time thinking about the stupid bullshit.
Yes. So this was done poorly, and as a result, when they go to the evidence locker in the ghost cop police precinct,
so they're taking matter from the
real world
realm
and bringing it to this ghost realm.
Which is only a police station. That's
yes,
the only thing.
But their
that
evidence locker has a lot of like gears, and like it's a big piece of machinery that they
like
have to operate.
The Lionsgate logo.
And it does look a lot like the Lionsgate logo. And you're wondering, like, well, this is, they basically have magic. So, like, why do they need all these machines to do this? Why don't they just have like a magic room where they keep this stuff?
Yeah, they don't need to worry about force and physics and ladders.
I mean, there's a part where Ryan Reynolds.
Important invention.
Magnets.
There's a part where Mary Louise Parker is bringing Ryan Reynolds through their like file room, and they're just walking on air from one door to another. There's no floor. It's just this.
And let me tell you guys, it looks super realistic.
It doesn't look CGI-ish like at all, like everything else in this movie that just looks like computers. But there's a guy on a really tall ladder opening up a file, and it's like, well, if they don't need a floor, why does he need a ladder? Like, I don't understand. Can't he just fly around? He's a ghost. Anyway, there's a lot of not really thinking
maybe
about
maybe
this.
He's a human who just works in the ghost.
Oh,
precinct.
So they had an ad in the paper.
That's a rough commute, by the way.
Yeah, gotta go outside and get sucked up into the sky vortex, and then you go to your job. How do you get home?
I don't know. You have Ryan Reynolds take you? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess he drives you there.
Takes you through the magical toilet that they travel.
It goes into a VCR repair shop. Because here's the thing. You learn that you can. There's this one portal between the ghost precinct and Boston, which is the bathroom of a VCR repair shop. And the two partners, Jeff Bridges and Ryan Reynolds, don't get along at first. Why would they? It's a movie. Eventually, they win each other's trust and respect, blah, blah, blah. They go to...
But not that much.
But not that much. They still don't like each other.
I feel like the
much.
Movie kind of just glosses over that.
That's for part two and part three, dude.
Eventually... No, I mean, they're friends at the end. It's just that, like...
They just don't really put that much energy into this odd couple pairing.
They don't really do much to win each other over. Yeah. And eventually, it's like they just kind of stop... They just forget that they don't like each other.
Yeah.
And suddenly, they like each other.
Like, normally, there's a scene where they go out for, like, ghost noodles at, like...
Goodles.
Like the ghost guy's favorite, like, hole-in-the-wall ghost doodle joint.
Goodle joint.
Yeah.
And there would actually be some effort defining Ryan Reynolds' character beyond the fact that he stole gold one time and has a wife.
Yeah, all you
I
those,
mean, widow.
Those are really his only characteristics.
I guess he likes gold.
And
so
we have to assume is totally...
He's kind of like a leprechaun.
And we have to assume is totally ripped, but he never takes his shirt off, so we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't need to take that shirt off.
Ripped.
He is. That's. I thought this movie was just ripped and it was about guys working on their abs. But it was about ghosts working out to get super, super built. But anyway, so they go to Earth. He goes to his funeral, tries to approach his wife, but the ghosts are seen in fake identities by living people. And Ryan Reynolds is instead James Hong, an old Chinese man.
Mm-hmm.
And... So he, every time he tries to approach his wife, he just looks like an old Chinese man who's trying to touch her face, which is
and the whole
frightening.
The sequence is when done almost as sensitive as in Spawn.
They are going for that. They're going for, this is the heartbreaking moment when his wife doesn't recognize him. But yeah, it's really like all you can think is like, man, you look, this is super creepy. You're just a stranger right. walking up and trying to touch your face.
Well, and Jeff Bridges.
And who walks up and touches somebody's face anyway? Even if it's somebody you love, you just walk up and touch their face? That's weird.
Well, faces are very touchable
sometimes. In public?
Yeah, yeah. It's legal now.
Jeff Bridges' avatar is a hot lady, some Victoria's Secret model whose name escapes me. But the movie treats like the very existence.
Her name escapes him.
Yeah, not like he's not going to Google it later.
He's going to Google something.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
The movie treats the
R.I.P.D. hot lady nude. That's what he's gonna go feet.
Yeah, that is.
He's gonna say, "Did you mean R.I.P.D. hot lady nude feet?"
I was just gonna say that this movie treats the very existence of hot ladies and elderly Asian men as hilarious, as a punchline in and of itself.
Punchline.
Like, there's no
need for extra jokes.
There's no complications. Actually, like, there are actual scenes where it could be funny to, like, cut to the other person doing the thing.
That Ryan Reynolds or Jeff Bridges
yeah,
doing.
But they just don't do it. They don't do it.
Well, we also learned that...
Why R.I.P.D.?
We should go through the rest of the plot real fast. They learn that cumin powder makes deados who are in disguise reveal themselves as monsters. They chase one down, and he vomits up a bunch of gold. And it looks like the gold Ryan Reynolds stole. Turns out it's magic gold. They give it to Mike O'Malley, who's like a Red Sox guy, who gives it to Kevin Bacon.
Because
it's Boston.
And he's not wearing a hat.
Tea potty. Am I right?
Yep.
Hot lava.
Did you already say beans earlier?
Yep, we've covered beans.
Beans? Okay, other Boston stuff.
Cobblestones.
Cream pie. Did you say cream pie earlier?
Wicked fighting.
don't know what's going
Wicked
on.
Wicked video.
Have you been to Boston, Dan?
Viva la France.
No, that's not what it is.
Okay.
Empire State Building.
Empire Strikes Back.
Sydney Opera House. Tokyo Tower. Big Statue of Jesus in Rio de Janeiro.
Perfect.
Yep. Leaning Tower of Pisa in Boston.
It's pizza.
Leaning Tower of Pizza. This movie's so dumb. I feel such...
Maybe so they got the magic gold, they put that shit in the evidence locker.
But I feel
locker.
Like such a waste of my time.
Okay.
So they go on the hunt for more gold because Kevin Bacon's collecting all this magic stupid gold. They find there's a deado. They chase after him and he goes, "I'm tired of hiding," and leads them on a merry chase. Destructive, on a destructive rampage through the city.
Long story short.
Caught on TV.
They get the gold.
They don't get the gold.
Oh, they, they got that gold.
Oh, they do get the gold, but they get suspended. And so the next day, they get suspended, and they're told, tomorrow's your disciplinary hearing, so I guess now do whatever.
Card blanche.
Where you might get erased.
You might get erased
Live
forever.
Like you're dying, dude.
But until then, just kind of go wherever, do whatever.
Yeah, that's what they call it, right?
Double dog day.
They find out that the gold they picked up is part of something called the Staff of Jericho, a mystical device that will, instead of having dead people leave the earth and go to dead place, they'll come back down to
heaven,
earth, thus destroying the earth.
In a real Avengers-style tunnel full of stuff.
Vortex.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon reveals that he's been an evil deado all along. They arrest him and they take him to the police station, but hey, this is a movie, so being arrested and taken to the police station was part of his plan the whole time.
Yeah.
Even though he still went for a gun when they came to pick him up.
He pulled a real Joker Benedict Cumberbatch.
A Benedict Joker badge.
I wonder in real life how many criminals are arrested and try and psych out the police by being like, how do you know this isn't part of my whole plan, buddy?
That would be.
They're like, you're on crystal meth. Stop talking to me.
You saw Dark Knight.
Why do you think I'd let you catch me when I was breaking into that ATM?
There's a phone in your stomach. There's not a phone in my stomach.
Yes, there. Well, I'm Khan. No, you're not. But it's just one of many plot twists that we've seen in other movies. But RIPD was like, hey, who cares if they've seen it before? We're going to do it. We're going to make it all computer animated-y and not really put much attention to it. Anyway, they escape with all the gold. The deados go back to Earth. They're going to build this Jericho Tower thing to bring all the dead people. They kidnap Ryan Reynolds' wife because she's got to be the sacrifice for it because it runs on living blood. There's a big action sequence at the end.
Why'd the bad guy take her? You could have taken anybody, right?
Well, he says, it didn't need to be her, but I wanted to get a last dig on Ryan Reynolds.
No, that's stupid, though.
Because
like,
he didn't like Van
He's just asking for it.
He liked the sequel, though.
Goes right, comes right. The one about Rise of Taj.
He thought Cal Penn was pretty funny.
He thought Taj was a character with a lot of
what about Taj?
Possibility.
What's his story?
Well, we've seen the rise of Taj. What's he going to do now that he's risen? And it was it like the rise of Cobra? Or more like the revenge of the fallen?
Yeah, you really expect to see the fall of Taj and then the redeeming of Taj.
The re-rise of Taj, like a Taj Phoenix.
It's like the Colors trilogy.
Yep, that's exactly what it's like. It's like the Decalogue. So there's a big fight, and the good guys win in the end. And this movie is so rote and by the numbers.
Oh boy, is
just
it.
Imagine Men in Black, but not done
but
quite as well.
Aliens with ghosts.
The aliens are ghosts. Instead of Will Smith, it's Ryan Reynolds. Instead of Jeff Bridges, it's Tommy Lee Jones. And
that's the movie. You switch that all around, I think, but that's okay.
I'm sorry,
and they have magic bullets. Did he say that?
Yeah,
they have magic bullets
that kill ghosts. And there at the end, they're reinstated on the Force.
The city of Boston is destroyed by these weird ghost vortexes.
Except it's back up and running
days later.
Thank you.
This is one of those movies where the city of Boston, parking garages are collapsing, cars are raining from the sky, there's people getting hurt, and then a couple days later, they're just walking around and everything's fine.
Yeah.
It's like the movie...
Hey, Boston survives, dude.
It does. That's
well, the
true.
Main reason Boston survives is the fakest looking city I've ever seen in a movie.
Everything's so fake looking in this movie. And it feels... I was saying to Dan Stewart while we were watching, it felt like it was taking place in the city playset that Ghostbusters toy commercials were shot in, where there were a lot of fake buildings and there was nobody on the streets, of course, because it was just a place for the Ghostbusters to fly their ecto chopper around, you know, and shoot some big ghost demon.
Yeah, it was all a combination.
It's called the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Of obvious.
It wasn't always the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Obvious backlot sets and CGI.
Yeah.
The entire thing.
But there's a lot of, I gotta give them points for style. Every shot has a lot of style. There's a lot of zooms. There's a lot of slow-mo.
Yeah.
There's a lot of off-kilter angles. There's a lot of color changes.
This is the type of action movie that George Lucas would see and be like, this is a gritty and realistic depiction of violence.
Yeah.
What's weird is he just watched Ms. 45 before it, too.
One thing I wanted to call out.
I apologize. I want to apologize to everybody about my lack of interest in this movie after watching it. It really was like, if this movie had more James Hong in it, I think it would might have kept my attention more. But it was so like, all right, here's the scene where he sees the police station for the first time. Then his partner gets introduced shooting a bad guy who gets loose. Then they go here, and he has to deal with the fact that he's a ghost. They don't tell him, of course. He has to learn it by doing something stupid.
Here's sure? some reaction shots of people seeing a beautiful blonde and an old Chinese actor hanging out together.
Yeah, as if they couldn't be friends. Come on, why not? Who says they can't? Maybe they're married. Why not?
Are you sure?
Life's
not
about differences, you know?
Yeah, come on. Opposites attract, just like MC Scat Cat said.
Are you sure you're not pulling a, you know what, guys? Now that I have a kid, I understand.
No, it's not one of those.
R.I.P.D. is not what's important in this life.
No, you know what?
When you have children, you'll understand.
You guys don't get this because you've never created a life. Yeah. But there's not a lot of room for R.I.P.D.
Dan has probably created many lives.
That's true. Well, he's created many enemies. Is it the same thing?
Yeah.
But it really felt like this movie, it felt like the people making it put so little effort into it. Aside from the people, I guess, who are rendering computer graphics, who put a lot of work in, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But everything was so, it's like they paid someone who worked on Men in Black to buy the outline for the movie, and then they just changed stuff in it.
To return,
like they went, they got the opposing team's playbook. And then, they paid some slimy guy who like held a boom mic on Men in Black to give them the secrets.
To return briefly to
Ghostbusters, the
logic problems with this film, okay. I just want to highlight one thing, which is when Ryan Reynolds throws Jeff Bridges in front of a bus and Jeff Bridges gets run over, which is he's fine because he's a ghost, whatever.
Except that the people on the bus have just seen a beautiful woman get run over by a bus.
And
it just cuts to the next scene after something else happens that you're going to talk about.
Are you concerned that a lot of people on that bus are now going to be Googling beautiful woman run over by bus as a new fetish?
Feet nude, yeah. But what's weird is that I assume they would try to help her. Nobody questions why this woman is alive while a bus is on top of her. They're supposed to like stay out of the public eye, but they do such a bad job of it. But everybody, it's like a movie where it's like Dark City. Boston is Dark City, and every night the Bostonians go to bed and their memories get wiped. Mm-hmm. And so they forget all the crazy shit they saw that day. But you were going to say,
he gets hit by a bus, and his 10-gallon hat flies off in the wind. And he's like, oh, my hat! And you just wonder, like...
And he tries on hats for the rest of the movie, and there's when they talk to Mike O'Malley, they slyly put in a hat trying on montage. So, but they should have just
snuck it in because everyone's like, everybody's bored of this scene.
But you're kind
of, don't care about following leads.
And I got it. And I have to say, watching Jeff Bridges try on hats is a lot more interesting than anything.
You're
else.
Really delaying the payoff of this anecdote.
So his hat flies off.
The point
anecdote, is, it's not something that happened to you. It's a scene in the movie. This anecdote.
This one time I saw a ghost get run over.
You're really ruining my personal memory.
You're delaying the payoff of the point of this, which is like. Is this a fucking ghost hat? Like, why does he have this hat in the first place? Like, he loses a hat and then he can't get another hat.
Here's
like,
the thing. When he's a beautiful woman, he's not wearing a hat.
Exactly.
So the hat is part of his ghost clothes.
Of course she's not wearing a hat. She doesn't need it. She's a babe.
So did this hat die?
She doesn't need accessories.
Did someone shoot this hat? Did someone pour poison into this hat? Why?
Same thing with his sunglasses. He wears sunglasses at one point.
Clearly
which is not from, like, when he's from. Like, he's from, like, the 1800s. So, like...
He stole them from another ghost.
Somebody stepped on
their sunglasses. He murdered a ghost and took their sunglasses.
Somebody stepped on their sunglasses by accident. The sunglasses died and became a ghost, and he found them.
Yeah.
So here's what happened. That hat was a crooked cop's hat.
And that hat had one day till retirement.
The hat was had one day and was shot. And Hat Heaven said, you can either join the RIPD or you can go to Hat Hell. And so he was sitting on Jeff Bridges' head until he got blown off because the wind affects ghosts. That's the other thing. The ghosts have corporeal bodies. There's a part.
Yeah, do you think the hat's like, I'm free of my curse?
Yeah. A light shines and my work on Earth is done. I've accomplished my last deed.
There's a lady's cowboy hat and a beam of light.
Oh, my grandma's hat is beckoning me into the bright light. But here's the thing. Ryan Reynolds is in. He agrees to join the RPD, and Mary Lou Trotter goes, this is going to sting, or this is going to tickle or something. And a badge burns into his chest. And it's like, wait a minute, hold on a second. He's a ghost, but he can feel pain, and he has a physical body that like can have things burned into it. Why don't they just go down as invisible ghosts and catch the crooks? It'd be a lot easier.
Well, also, if they can interact with matter, why not just give him a fucking RIPD badge that does not burn into
that he could just
like
put on his coat?
It seems a lot cheaper, like, to just fabricate a fucking badge instead of have to do some kind of special effect.
Anyway,
I can whip that up in like 10 minutes. Give me some fucking papier-mâché or whatever.
That's a very gambit way to say it. Rogue some papier-mâché, mon chéri.
What's he doing? Oh, like making her a fucking present?
I wish so much that we could kiss over this papier-mâché.
One of their Xavier's Gifted Academy projects was in Volcano. Because it's still a school, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just because he's a 30-year-old Cajun man doesn't mean he doesn't have to go to science
30,
class.
I think you're being charitable.
I was being nice. He's clearly about 37.
Yeah.
He's whatever age Jean-Claude Van Damme was when Wizard wanted to cast him in the role.
He's whatever age it's not creepy for him to be hanging out with young Storm.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
We should move on.
What we're saying is the logic of RIPD and the metaphysics are not totally... lacking. Not totally well thought through.
But we should move on to final
So the
judgments.
Hat that Mary Louise Parker gives him later on.
That's a real hat.
That's a real hat.
She just bought it. It's in a bag still. Yeah.
She didn't get that bag. Like, she didn't smother a hat, and then now that's the hat ghost. Smothered it with the bag.
Yeah. I wish then it cut to the real Boston PD, and there's an outline of a hat on the ground. Another hat murder. Damn it.
It's like there's a hat serial killer.
We're seeing there. Too many good hats get killed. We got to protect his rights. What about the rights of that hat? Don't you care about its rights?
This is great stuff.
And they walk into the evidence dungeon and there's just brims nailed to the wall. They open up the fridge and there's like a cap in there. You sick fuck.
there's a hat band. Anyway.
The hat band, like a bunch of hats that play music together.
Yep. And they have a shark playing drums.
Like, why is Jabberjaw in this band?
It doesn't have to be Jabberjaw. Why are you scared?
I was going
to
be a different shark who plays drums.
He's always annoyed that everybody assumes that he's Jabberjaw.
I'm not, just because I'm a shark who plays drums doesn't mean I'm Jabberjaw. That's racist to say that all sharks who play drums look alike.
I'm glad you didn't do the accent, by the way.
Okay. Well, we should move on.
And his name is Jaws Ulrich.
Final Judgments.
That's not bad.
Was this a good bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie you kind of like? Stu, go.
Oh, man. It was probably a great, amazing movie. Wait, was that an option? No, it's a bad movie. It was way less fun than I was hoping for. There's way too many special effects. Nothing seems to have any weight. Kevin Bacon seems to have a little bit of fun, and Jeff Bridges kind of does, except he can't understand his accent, really.
Jeff Bridges really,
I think he hammed it up a little too much.
Yeah, and he mush-mouths it too much. He's having fun, maybe, doing it.
Yeah. I say this is a bad movie. There was a time toward the end of the movie where Elliot was like, are either of you guys' eyes not working anymore?
Yeah, there was a certain point where it was so CGI and so bad that I was just seeing colors moving around on screen. I think my eyes were like when your computer goes to sleep. That's what it was like.
And I kind of felt that way through most of the movie.
A collage of like Facebook pictures or anything.
What I was seeing was flying toasters.
Yeah, the movie of your life.
Wait, was I dying? My life was flashing from my eyes.
What happens when my computer falls asleep.
Your computer dies each time, and it's just remembering its life. Remembers that when it woke up at the factory, the first time you booted it up, when you installed all those any type of video games or whatever, when you looked at porn, that kind
of
stuff.
Sounds like a really awkward version of Her.
Yeah,
yeah, but I didn't care for the fakiness or the boringness of this.
Amazing.
Yeah, I agree. It felt so bland and boring and not fun, and nobody putting any creative effort into it except Jeff Bridges, I guess, and not enough James Hong.
What about all the action? You like that?
I like action, but there was one when they were chasing that one guy. It was an okay action sequence. Otherwise, not very good action. So I also give this a bad.
Okay, so moving on to just another word from another sponsor. We are rolling in sponsors.
We are very popular when it comes to sponsors.
But we're also very selective of our sponsors.
Yeah, and we need sponsors because we have drug and alcohol problems.
No. Okay. Just want to put in a word for our delightful sponsors over at Warby Parker. If you need to wear spectacles, like, say...
Two-thirds of the Flophouse.
Or, yeah, Elliot or I. Or if you're just a cool dude and you want some sunglasses, like Stuart, then why don't you look into Warby Parker?
Okay.
They believe...
Sold.
Well, that was easy.
They believe that glasses should not be so expensive, and I agree.
No, I disagree. Glasses should be expensive.
Whatever, nerdlinger.
Oh, man, no wonder I have no friends.
Their prescription glasses start at $95 with the prescription lenses included.
That is a fantastic price.
Their titanium collection starts at $145. I assume that's there.
So you can buy multiple pairs to match cool. with your, I don't know, t-shirts or sweaters or mm-hmm. whatever you guys wear.
I mean, whatever you wear, yeah.
Every
belt buckles.
Pants, hats,
scorpion
gloves.
Belt buckles.
Capes, mm-hmm. half capes.
All of these would go deliciously with Warby Parker glasses.
Burnouses.
all their
whalebone
glasses,
corsets.
All their glasses have anti-reflective and anti-glare coating with no additional cost. And here's the thing.
Say goodbye to glare.
Mm-hmm. They make it easy. What you do is you log onto their site. You get to check out the frames that they have on offer. And you can select up to 5 frames to be sent to you for home try-on.
So 5 frames?
Like, yeah.
Well, that's an embarrassment of riches.
Well, to try them on.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's like going to the store and trying on glasses, but you don't even have to go to the store. Mm-hmm. The store comes to you.
Yeah. You can keep the frames for 5 days before sending them back free of charge with a prepaid returning shipping label. And when you place an order for glasses, they'll get started on them right away and have them in your hands within 10 business days. That's fast, man. For glasses.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I don't have to shop for glasses, but you guys seem pretty excited.
You gotta grind those lenses mm-hmm. the same way that Van Leeuwenhoek had to when he invented the microscope.
And here's one thing, too. For every pair of glasses sold, they distribute a pair to someone in need. So you can feel charitable just because your eyes don't work good.
Or apparently your vocabulary. But it's good stuff, so it's very inexpensive glasses.
Yeah.
You can try them on before you buy them on. They donate glasses to charity when you buy glasses. You can do it all through the mail. I don't see a downside.
Yeah. So if you're interested in this delightful deal, just go to warbyparker.com/housecat. That's our personalized URL. That tells them that the Flophouse sent you.
And it also, you know that the house cat, these are the sunglasses that he wears.
Yeah, of course. He wouldn't be caught dead in anything else.
Is that an RIPD bud?
I don't know.
So Warby Parker, for all your eyeglasses or sunglasses needs, tell them the Flophouse sent you to their website for glasses.
But also, we want to take a moment to spotlight another one of our friends over at All Things Comedy.
Oh, that's our network.
Yeah. This week, we're spotlighting comedy film nerds. I don't know who in the Flophouse audience would be interested in a podcast titled Comedy Film Nerds. That seems 100% out of their purview.
Let's look at the Venn diagram. Mm-hmm. Oh, nope, it's just a circle. Yep. Matches completely.
So this is hosted by Chris Mancini and Graham Elwood. They actually have their own book, too, The Comedy Film Nerds Guide to Movies. But they're also running a Kickstarter for a documentary called Earbuds, a movie about podcasting.
2 ears who are friends.
Yeah, a Pixar film.
They're on different heads.
Ears.
They're on different. Oh, that's the twist. But they want to be on the same head.
But if you
no, they're on the same head and they get separated. They have to find each other in the big city.
Okay, it's like body parts.
But if you would like to see a documentary about podcasting, and who wouldn't? Who wouldn't really? Unless you're a monster.
I was going to say a monster.
Search Comedy Film Nerds
like
on
Pinhead.
Kickstarter. And
Pinhead, I don't think it's like,
Pinhead would hate
I'd
that.
Like to see that documentary.
Yeah,
he would take that documentary in DVD form and throw it into your face. Yeah. And then you'd have a DVD stuck in your face forever.
So Comedy Film Nerds.
It would be kind of erotic.
Yeah.
Weirdly
it would rip
erotic.
Your clothes off.
Well,
but
there's such
the
a there's such a thin line between pain and pleasure.
Yeah.
If you're a Cenobite. So Comedy Film Nerds. Listen to it. Check it out. Warby Parker, buy some glasses. Pro Flowers, buy some flowers.
But now...
RIPD, stay away from that. Do not buy...
Do not touch bad.
if you see a copy of RIPD, call the police. And I don't mean the ghost police. Call the real police so that they can kill whoever left it there.
There's definitely a point in RIPD where...
In where our the, IPD?
Our, yeah, our IPD.
Or
our initial IPD. Public doffering.
That's when you, the first time you doff your cap in public.
Yep, it's your initial public doffering.
There's a moment where these ghost cops are running around and they don't really seem to have a real crime to solve. They're just goofing
they're just
and
following
chasing gold.
They might have called it gold chasers.
Chasing the gold.
That's, yes. That's a scene where they should have had like a scene over ghost noodles or whatever where they catch up and like learn noodles. About how, you know, they're not that different after all.
Yeah, they're both ghosts.
That scene doesn't exist though.
But now this is the time where we read a few letters from listeners. And
how does that start, that segment usually?
I don't. There's usually no.
I feel like there's something inside me that I have to let out, but it feels so unfamiliar. And I don't know what it is, but I guess I'll just do it. I don't know. It's the letter segment. It's letter time for you and me, and you as well, Dan, and you, Stuart, and you, the listener, and you, that cat. It's time for the letters for all. Letters for us and letters for tall. Letters for short, letters for wide. Letters for thin, letters side to side. Letters all around. Letters up and down. Letters in here, letters in there. Letters in your hair, letters everywhere, okay. Letters that can scare, letters I bear, letters for everyone here and there,
okay.
Letter Bag is brought to you by this show.
All right. Before we get into letters, I want to make a personal plea.
I sang the song and now the letters are not going to follow
make,
post with.
I want to make a personal plea.
Write more letters that compliment Dan, please.
No. Don't get me wrong. We appreciate every letter that we get.
Every letter is a precious snowflake.
But if you can, try and keep it a little short. Or failing that, write the letter in easily broken apart pieces. So if maybe we want to pull out just one bit of the letter to read on air.
Yeah, perforated. Yeah.
And keep those jokes short because we're going to interrupt it like a million times.
Yeah, these fuckers.
Dan is going to get super mad.
Dan knows. Dan knows. We interrupt him all the time.
If there's a delayed punchline or a callback, it may not be gotten.
It will not
to.
Land because we'll have interrupted it.
But write really complicated words and sentences.
Because yeah. Dan reads them wrong, and then we can make fun of him about it.
So this first letter is from Mick, last name withheld. He says, "Yo, floppers, big fan of the podcast."
Thanks, Mick.
I have not listened.
Yo.
Yo, right Jesus back Christ, at you, which is Spanish for I.
I haven't listened in order from the beginning, so I don't know your origin story. What circumstances?
Well, Dan was bitten by a radioactive nothing. Stuart is from the planet Cool Balls, and I'm just your regular vampire private eye.
What circumstances could have forged a movie podcasting alliance between Elliot and two people who seemingly never / rarely watch real movies? P.S., what's Dan's first language? How do Elliot and Stuart always know what he means? Is it like a Han Solo Chewbacca situation where the audience is just supposed to suspend their disbelief?
And also, he only wears a bandolier, nothing else.
Maybe you could do the prequel explaining
filled
this.
With bowcaster bolts, I guess? They look like fucking... like
the cartridges like for bowcaster, yeah. They're boxes of chiclets. Because Chewbacca has a sweet tooth.
We've actually talked about our origin story, how we all like got to know each other before. I actually... honestly wanted to read this letter mainly to be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Seemingly never will rarely watch real movies.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Stuart, doesn't. But Dan, he occasionally does.
I have... Just because I don't talk about classic Hollywood as much as Elliot doesn't mean that I don't have a grounding in...
You know, they show all kinds of shit on planes now,
oh,
dude.
Oh, God.
Dan's preferred movie theater, the airplane.
I'll have you know that I am a film school dropout, friends.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's internet evidence to prove you're watching Sudden Death with Jean-Claude Van Damme a couple nights ago. And if that's not cinema, then I don't know what is.
No, but Elliot knows quite well that I'm very conversant in classic Hollywood.
Yeah, well-versed. He watches real movies, real in quotes, all the time.
And I watch real sex whenever I get the chance.
Pervazoid on the march. And Stuart watches real movies, too. It's not usually it's because his wife wants to watch, like, a rom-com, right?
Yeah, that's a real movie, right?
I mean, it's slightly more real than, like, Head of the Family.
What are you talking about?
First off, there's real actors in that.
That's true.
You can't tell me that head isn't real.
You know how many hard, you know how
Jacqueline Lavelle, dude, the body on that one.
You know how few roles there are for heads?
Sure.
They're not making that Nexus movie.
Sure.
For fans of Nexus out there.
Yeah, they're not MODOK. The MODOK movie isn't coming out.
That MODOK series.
Moving on. This is from Brad, last name withheld.
Hey, Brad.
Bradley Cooper.
Hi, guys. Love the show. I've listened to a ton of your episodes, and you continuously crack me up. Before I forget, Elliot's friend John asked me to deliver a message. Parentheses. Picks up Elliot's stapler. This is mine now, nerd. And while walking away, I'm supposed to shout that Dan isn't always better than you, but you're also really funny, too, so I'm not going to do that. I'm taking your stapler, though.
Oh, thanks. Well,
so apparently Brad had a Hodgman.
Apparently either was involved with Hodgman, or Hodgman told him to do something, or he imagined it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Hodgman wouldn't take a stapler. He'd take something I wanted, like a toy or like a personal object, you know, like a wallet
sure.
or something
now,
like that.
Here's something that happened. When you became head writer...
Two tickets to see, I don't know, Justin Bieber or something?
Yeah, because I want both seats.
Yeah.
One for me and one for my crush.
When you became head writer, he walked into my room and picked up my Nerf gun. And I thought, okay, well, now it's happening to me. But he just wanted to take it down the hall to shoot at you.
Yep.
And then he returned it to me.
He bought me this huge Nerf gun. It's enormous, and it fires the pellets, because they're not suction cup thingies. They're just like little Nerf bullets, so hard. And so, of course, he shot me with one of them, and it stung really bad.
It's a little late for you to slap together that Rocket Raccoon audition tape.
No, it's never too late. Never too late.
Called up your pal Harry Knowles to shoot the video for you?
I'll do it in the sequel.
Yeah.
So
maybe I'll be in the Rocky Raccoon movie.
This letter is from Will and Craig, last name withheld.
Oh, two people at one time?
It's titled...
Now, do they have the same last name or different last names?
I don't know. It's titled Road Trippin' with a Flophouse. Dear Dan, Stewart, and Housecat, my
Am
friend
not,
Craig,
not
last
involved?
Name withheld, and I wanted to let you know that we drove from Seattle to Austin this week
it's a
and
long
listened
drive.
To about 1 million episodes of your podcast en route. This is my third or fourth time through the back catalog, but Craig's first exposure to the Flophouse. He immediately took a liking to Dan and decided he hated Elliot.
Wow.
Going so far...
So he shares the same taste as the internet.
Going so far as to constantly mock the way Elliot says, and I'm Elliot Kalin
and Dan's
at the beginning
cat.
Of each episode. Fuck you, Elliot, typically followed.
Really? Wait, just because I introduced Wait,
there's
myself?
There's a turnaround coming. However, a few days and several hundred miles later, Craig had decided that actually he'd like he and Elliot to be the best of friends. You see, they share the same affinity for constantly trolling everyone, especially Dan, who has trouble speaking English.
I don't know if I call that trolling. It's affectionate ribbing.
Craig has his own problems with our language, as evidenced numerous times on the road trip when he took required attempts.
What's a road tip?
It's a good thing to know when you're going out on the road.
When he took required attempts to get a simple sentence out. I think you also have trouble with the language, sir. But squealed in glee each and every time Elliot caught Dan in a similar misspeaking incident. The moral of the story, if Elliot has any interest in visiting Austin,
I do.
Craig would certainly buy him some Popeyes. Thanks for passing the time so well as we drove through Wyoming, South New Mexico, and other assholes of America.
Wow.
Love. P.S. Also free David Kalin.
Nope, David Kalin will continue to stay imprisoned in the bottle city of Kandor, where they have no sports. It's the worst punishment of all. Arrgh. It wouldn't be so bad being tiny if they had a tiny football team. I think if him going from hating me to loving me over the course of a car ride is more a Stockholm syndrome type thing.
Sure.
He started connecting with me as a captor.
Yeah. I have one last...
But thank you for writing in.
I have one last surprise for you guys.
Okay,
you're a woman.
For
this
our
is just like the end
home.
Of just one of the guys. Dan just ripped open his shirt to reveal boobs.
These gifts came in.
What?
Around the holidays, and I've been saving them since Elliot's been on paternity leave.
Yeah, it says Happy Holidays. It's all wrapped up. My name's
so
on it.
This comes.
There's a snowman. I like that. It's not you know Christian
this,
or anything.
This comes yeah. with note cards that say "Read after unwrapping." From Sam. I'm going to mispronounce this. Dunkalio. Thank you, Sam,
Halo,
for these gifts.
Oh, so you do? You,
I already unwrapped mine. I
because you have no patience.
No, mine. Mine is 15 films of horror He also gave me the remake of Sleuth, which I left at work because I don't care about the remake of Sleuth.
And he gave me Six String Samurai, a movie I was just thinking about the other day.
And he gave me Amon Apocalypse of Devil Man.
All right, so now I'm going to read the notes.
Thank you very much, sir.
Floppy belated holidays, he writes. Big fan, wanted to share a few DVDs from my personal collection. Please enjoy or possibly enjoy not enjoying them, as the case may be. For Dan, a Michael Caine movie I never bothered to unwrap, plus a not terrible collection of old horror flicks. For Elliot, a terribly pretentious slash just terrible movie about a guy who wanders the desert playing a guitar or some shit.
I don't know if it's terrible so much as just not great.
There's also a kid following him or he rescues him or blah, blah, blah. Its artiness is so heavy-handed that I know it was the one for Elliot. For Stuart, a hyper-gory anime that probably is legitimately damaged my psyche. It was from the Devilman series, which is in another movie. Includes women, demons getting their boobs torn off in battle. Yes, you read that right. No ding-dong ripping, though. Sorry.
Okay.
That's all. Keep on flying.
I guess if it's good for the gander.
And Stuart tosses it into the bin.
P.S.
So basically you wanted to clear out your DVD collection so you mailed it to us.
I think that's true.
But the thought is nice.
P.S. Dan, I know Elliot and Stuart seem more...
I mean, these were wrapped really well.
Yeah, that's true.
P.S. Dan, I know Elliot and Stuart seem more thoughtful. They are. That's why you got two. Yes, I did leave, as I said, Sleuth at work because I don't care about it. But these this collection of 15 classic horror movies.
There's some good movies on there. Not bad. Last Man on Earth is on there.
I'm sure the fact that there's 15 on them on three discs means that
the quality is very high. But very high.
Sure. But there's some stuff in there that looks great.
Yeah, Carnival of Souls. That's a good movie.
Yeah.
Night of the Living Dead. That's a fantastic movie.
So, yeah, send us gifts, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, feel free to send us gifts now.
Thank you very much, Sam.
We may or may not open them on air.
But now...
I'm so glad there was not anthrax in there.
Yeah.
We should take a moment to recommend...
To remember
movies.
Our fallen friends.
And yes. The RIPD.
Let's remember all the movies that have fallen in the last year.
Can we roll that montage? We can't? All right.
Well, I guess we shouldn't have spent all that time preparing it. It was really good.
No, this is the part of the podcast where we recommend movies that we actually liked in contrast to RIPD. Elliot,
which
you've been
loved.
Gone. Why don't you start us off?
Well, my movie watching of late has been slightly less
curtailed.
Frequent. Yeah, curtailed due to my new responsibilities as a human taker care.
So you've mainly just been watching a lot of, what, Takeshi Miike movies? Or
yeah, well, I wanted to get
Lars von Trier.
I wanted to embrace the classics early. Just stuff that's age appropriate, so you know, Cannibal Holocaust, that type of thing, Ishii the Killer, and so forth. So, but one movie I saw that I had not seen before that I liked a lot was Martin Scorsese's first film, Who's That Knocking at My Door? Which I haven't. One of the big problems again with the having a baby is I haven't gotten to see Wolf of Wall Street. So I decided, all right, instead of seeing his most recent movie, I'll see his first movie. And it's interesting how for a movie that is a first film, much of it. Taken from his student film that he made at NYU, I think, it really feels like a Martin Scorsese movie all the way through. Like, you're seeing a director who is going to develop into a better film craftsman, but all the things he wants to do, for the most part, are there. And I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was good.
I'm going to take a page from Elliot's playbook and recommend two movies. I watched number one on Netflix streaming. Well, I actually watched both of these on Netflix streaming, although only one of them is still on Netflix streaming. The first one here, which is a documentary called Ray Harryhausen, Special Effects Titan. It's your typical,
Ray Harryhausen documentary.
No, it's your typical talking head documentary.
And that David Byrne's in it?
A lot of directors who were influenced by Ray Harryhausen, but also a lot of footage of Ray Harryhausen, the man himself, before he passed away, and a generous helping of footage from Ray Harryhausen films.
That never hurts, you know?
No, it does not hurt. It's great.
It's kind of like a glorified...
Unless it's the footage that he didn't work on, like the non-special effects scenes.
Yeah.
It's a glorified what?
It could be thought of as a glorified DVD extra... In style, but it's the best version of that. It's an entertaining version of that about a subject that's interesting.
It's not like those behind the scenes of Sherlock shows they've been airing after Sherlock.
I don't
that are really that feel that really do feel like a DVD extra that PBS is just padding out their mm-hmm. their schedule with.
No, this is a good version of that.
Oh, okay. Because those ones are a bad version of that.
About a worthy subject. But also, and I can't believe I'm recommending this, I watched Jean-Claude Van Damme's Sudden Death.
I thought I already recommended that.
It's possible.
Two recommendations for Sudden Death.
It's basically a Die Hard in a hockey stadium. And as I said...
I think they're called arenas.
As I said on the...
Rink.
Whatever. As I said on the Flophouse Facebook page, they used every part of the Buffalo in this movie, the Buffalo being that hockey stadium. Like, every possible use of, like, they have...
Even the Powers Booth Grotto.
They have a fight in the rink kitchen with Van Damme and a lady in a mascot costume that uses everything in a kitchen that could be used to kill somebody. There's a scene in it where Van Damme disguises himself as a hockey player and then gets called out on the ice to be a goalie for a while. It has a villain who is so committed to the idea that, like, he's going to blow up the stadium exactly when the game's over that when the game goes into sudden death, he's like, well, I guess I gotta hold off a little now. So it's a very silly movie, but it's a fun movie if you're a fan of action movies of that era. So, Stuart, what do you have?
I'm going to recommend a movie from this year. I don't know if we've talked about it already, but I recently watched Captain Phillips with Thomas Hanks.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, this is a movie that has got a lot of press. And I think, I mean, it's been nominated for a variety of awards. And not to throw out too many spoilers.
Hugo,
but
the Edgar,
yep,
the Good Housekeeping, the Popular Mechanics Best of What's New, the Caldecott, the Newbery.
The Cable Ace Award.
The Best Baby and World's Greatest Grandpa.
Wait a minute. That changes every year?
Yeah,
it does. Oh, man, I'm going to have to take a baby's mug back. So, World's Best Baby. It seems bullshit. It's not like the baby needs to fucking raise its spirits or something. What's the baby going to do? Wear that to the office to show everybody?
It's a serious award. And when the baby goes to work, he's got to drink his coffee out of something. So it's that mug. The Westminster Kennel Club also recognized Captain Phillips.
So... I feel like Tom Hanks... One of the things I liked about this movie is that it, you know, it from the trailers, if you've seen the trailers or seen the movie, I don't give a shit. You probably have an understanding of what the movie's about. And I feel like it kind of goes in that direction, but it's really the performances that are selling it. And I feel like Tom Hanks, both in this movie and maybe his whole career, I feel like he has been striving to convince me that he's my dad. Okay? Like, we have built this emotional connection together. And in the last 5 minutes of this movie,
oh, holy shit,
spoiler
the last
alert,
5 minutes are so
in the last
brutal.
5 minutes of this movie, I'm basically watching my dad break down and bawl his eyes out. And I was
like an event
destroyed.
Horizon.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That's how we call that bawling your eyes out to tear them out. Spoiler alert.
No, I watched this with my wife and both of us, like, at the very end of the movie, we're just breaking
down.
I haven't cried that much since the last time I watched a Tom Hanks movie called Toy Story 3.
Yeah.
So. Old Larry Crown.
You were crying.
Why did he lose his job?
Why did Hollywood make this movie? Who was it for?
I haven't cried that much since another Tom Hanks movie made me wonder, what happened to the other red shoe? Why does the man only have one red shoe?
What a lonely shoe.
Why does he have to be big?
All right, well.
So, Captain Phillips.
Cloud Atlas. But yeah, Captain Phillips is a very tense movie. Even knowing what happens, because it's based on a true story, I was very, like, I was tense throughout and, like, in suspense.
So, 4 great recommendations. But now, I recommend we end this podcast. That's a segue, guys.
That's great. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
That's why you're
professional
the professional.
Podcaster.
Yep.
Elliot.
Yes.
It was a delight to spend some time with Hallie, but it's nice to have you back home.
It feels good to be back.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to
Dan.
That same old place you joked about. What?
Dan, it's good to see you behind the steering wheel.
Thanks. Stuart, it's good to
steady
see you.
Steady hand at the tiller.
Great to see you with that scarf.
That scarf is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's both a fashion statement and it keeps my neck warm.
Dan, great to see you alive.
Wait, I don't. Okay.
For how long?
Thanks.
Did you enjoy that beer you just had?
What?
The beer marked poison.
Oh, God. All right. Well, I got to get some antidote for this, so we should sign off.
Yeah.
For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
Yes. And I am once again Elliot Kalin.
Good night, everyone.
Back in the saddle.
Got it on my phone in case we need to look at it. In case you're like, what do we do next, Elliot?
Mm-hmm. That sounds exactly like me.
That's me, Dan.
I'm a drunk clown.
That's drunk clown. Anyway, continue.
So we're doing like characters?
Yeah, now
what did I miss?
Dan is the drunk clown. This is how I do the show now that I'm back. Stuart, you're kind of like a happy-go-lucky ragamuffin penguin.
I don't think
and
that
I'm
works.
Like a,
I think I should play a super like stodgy, super by the book, no nonsense,
penguin.
Stodgy penguin.
And I am my new character of Laser Spaceman.
Okay.
Who is a janitor who works in a middle school.
And I'll play Dr. Sexo. You're the sexologist.
You're already the drunk clown.
You okay. He gets two characters?
You can have two characters, too. You're also like a single mom struggling to make ends meet
that
on the moon.
That sounds like me.
And I'm yep. An underwater cop named Fisho McKenzie. I solve water crimes.
Fisho's a family name, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Goes back to the old country. Land.